Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, I was having lunch with a friend of mine today, and he was telling me...
You have friends?
You know, my wife had a funny dream last night. She dreamed she married a millionaire. I told him, you're lucky. My wife dreams that in the daytime.
And since Joe's reading from a 1960s joke book, we also have...
Hey, that was Sam Ewing.
And who's that?
I don't know. Google it. Can't do all the work here. Jeez.
We also have the lovely and talented Jin Wicked. Jin,
and well,
how are you, and how's the donut?
How's the donut? The donut is it's sitting in my office in the middle of the pile of mess that I'm going to sort through someday.
Plated.
So, yeah.
Lots of sprinkles.
It's okay. I had a nap before the show, so I'm all right. I got my can of Rockstar here. This is a Rockstar Cucumber Lime, which is strange because I don't typically like cucumber at all, but there's something about the flavor of this drink that's strangely appealing. It's also in this kind of nice white can with this kind of soothing, cool green color on it that's like not quite lime green. It's kind of soft. I don't know. It's good. It's all good.
Good Lord. Joe, I have told you the story of Rockstar in my life, haven't I?
Hey now, it's a Rockstar. It's a story from Corey. Go for it.
I was dating a woman quite a few years ago.
Lies! Filthy lies!
And when I went to pick her up, she was like, I don't really feel all that good. Why don't we just stay here and watch a movie? I'm having like heart palpitations and stuff. And you hear that and you're like, oh my gosh, are you okay? What's happening? What's going on? She said, well, I really haven't had anything to eat today, but I drank 4 Rockstars. And I said, well, that would explain the heart palpitations, and maybe you shouldn't be doing that anymore. Oh, that would cause that? Yeah, that's why we didn't date all that long. But we're not here to talk about the rock stars and things like that.
Were you funny as a child?
No.
I was an accountant.
I'm not funny now. I was haunted as a child.
Haunted?
Haunted.
Haunted by what?
We still don't know. Haunted by this here podcast right now.
I see.
And Joe was making a snide comment at us, Jen.
He was?
Yes.
Why? He's mad because he didn't get to go to dinner last night.
Sounds like it.
Well, you know what, Joe? Maybe you should, like...
Save it. We got Freaking and Geeking coming up. We don't want to start early. I mean, that would be like me interrupting to say that FallCon, the one-day wonder, will be happening October 8th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Minnesota State Education Building. Advance tickets on sale
now.
Now. What are you waiting for? Go to www.mcbacomiccons.com and get yourself a free ticket.
I misspoke.
It's not a free ticket, but advance tickets will get you in before everybody else, and you get a better chance at getting one of them there. Free grab bags because they're only going out to the first 100 people. So, all sorts of fun stuff there.
Grab bags this time?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's the one day. One day's a little smaller.
Happy 4th of July, everybody! Except for you that are downloading this Sunday night.
Well, then they can listen to it while the fireworks are going off.
Yeah, I need some fireworks in my life.
To heck with the 1812 Overture. To heck with the whatever other classical music people play.
Can I talk about something I did the other day?
You can right after I talk about another convention.
Okay.
Okay.
Because before FallCon...
Yep.
You
what?
Slut. Going to another
we
concert?
Will be appearing at LionCon August 27th. 10 o'clock in St. Cloud.
Home of the Job Squad.
That's right.
What's the Job Squad?
Well, we can explain that later. But you could actually go and you could get tickets for LionCon, where we will be appearing. It goes from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. in St. Cloud, Minnesota, at the River's Edge Convention Center. You can head on over to their Facebook page, just put in LionCon, and then click on where it says there's tickets, because, boy, the URL for buying tickets is pretty darn long. We got all kinds of stuff going on there. There are tickets available. There's gaming. There's a $1,000 Magic the Gathering tournament.
Wow.
There is a cosplay contest. There is a red carpet after party for those of you who are 21 and older. And we're going to be there the whole time. I don't know who all from the crew will be there. I know that I will be there. And Joe will maybe be there. Jin will... August 27th.
Oh, I might be there.
And Jin may be there, and Lyndon may be there.
A winning endorsement. I may be there.
And we may have minions there. Dangerous Dan Moore is the guest of honor. And I have been told this week that I will be on panels, so I think I may need to know something.
How are you going to live stream and be on panels?
Well, we'll figure that out now, won't we? Maybe I will have a minion setting up the laptop to record.
I see.
That's what minions are for, right?
I see. I've never been to St. Cloud. Maybe I should go.
You should. St. Cloud is fun. Joe and I go at least once a year, usually only once a year. And hopefully Butch will come along. But either way, we're going to be there. It's it is a geek convention geared toward bringing the gaming and countercultures together right in the St. Cloud backyard, while promoting fun community and showcasing new and exciting products. Like us!
We're
excited.
New and exciting products?
We're new.
Said the actress to the bishop.
And Jen had something she wanted to say before we got our plugs out of the way, our appearances.
Well, we were talking about 4th of July, and it made me think of it. So all the stores here sell fireworks, and it's super weird.
But if you want really good fireworks, go to Wisconsin, because we're not allowed to have fun fireworks. Things that you could, you know, blow your fingers off with.
Well, I was driving home Friday because I had a show on Saturday, and I was frantically trying to find some of those black grid shelving units that you kind of snap together with the corners. You see artists using these all the time at shows, and I don't have any, and I owned some years and years ago, and they used to sell them like everywhere. I looked at Target, I looked at Walmart, I couldn't find them anywhere. Lowe's, Menards. I eventually Googled it on my phone to see if there was somewhere I could find to buy them, and then found them at Kmart of all places.
They still have Kmarts?
That was my thoughts exactly, because in Texas, at least in Houston, there's no more Kmarts. Apparently there is a Kmart here. Off of 35. So I go to this Kmart, and, you know, the Walmarts and everything, they have fireworks too, which is really disorienting because, you know, where I'm from, you can only buy them on, you know, the weekends around the holiday, you know, from like a stand. And I've seen like the giant fireworks warehouses in Wisconsin and I think Iowa, but... So I go in this Kmart, and they're selling fireworks, which is strange enough, but it's literally like a time capsule to like the 80s. Like, the Kmart is just everything is original. And I go in there, and I just have the strangest feeling. You know, they're playing Rock Lobster over the PA, and it went on so long, I thought it was like on repeat or something. Like, why are they just playing this one song? I finally went and played something else. But yeah, that it was strange. I did get my grid shelves, but yeah. So they still have Kmarts here. There was a Kmart playing Rock Lobster, selling fireworks. It was a very, I'm not doing it justice, it was a very surreal experience. I felt almost like something out of like an art film or whatever, because everything was so run down and strange and strangely like frozen in time. It felt like I had walked into like a scene from a particularly depressing movie or something.
Was there a backward talking midget or something around?
There wasn't, but I kind of felt like there should be. You know, it just felt so horribly out of place, and I was like, well, there's still a Kmart. There's still a Kmart in the world.
The cashier looked at you and said, "Where I'm from, the birds sing a pretty song.
I can see forever in the blue light special."
Well, we have a theme this week.
We do?
We do.
We do, after the disaster that was last week.
I thought last week's episode was fun. You blew up a balloon. We told a Tales from the Shop story. We talked about best-selling comics. I was surprised. The episode held together really, really well. And I'm tired of you people saying that an episode's a train wreck. We have two train wrecks a year.
We have a scheduled train wreck.
Yes.
Regularly scheduled train wreck in progress.
And who knows? One of these days, maybe you guys will get me to have a drink or two on the air.
Uh-huh. I wonder if you can mix this with any kind of alcohol.
Yes. Most people, vodka.
Cucumber vodka.
Well, it doesn't even have to be that. Then again, if you're drinking Rockstar and vodka, isn't that kind of like taking uppers and downers at the same time?
Yeah, I've always kind of wondered about that, like the whole like mixing a Red Bull with a vodka too thing. So.
Ugh.
I don't like Red Bull very much.
It tastes like battery acid.
See, somebody yeah, it kind of does. See, somebody offered me like a Monster, and I said I can't. I said tempting, but Monsters sometimes like upset my stomach. There's something in them that's just too much for me. So I usually only drink Rockstars. This is Joe's way of telling me he's not interested in this conversation.
Like we care.
You live down by the tracks now, Joe?
I'm feeling the hobo in me.
Hobo?
Hang on, I'll flip a switch.
Has someone bought Joe a soundboard?
I don't know. He keeps this up, I may actually tell my hobo story on the air.
Wave. Hi, everybody.
So we have a theme this week.
Okay, I'm going back to my train.
I don't know. Like,
this one's got a bell.
I don't know any songs related to trains.
Last Train to Clarksville?
I don't know the words for that.
Folsom Prison Blues.
Well, I was thinking, like, does, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine have a theme song? But I don't know how that goes either.
It's just music.
How do you know that?
I raised a son on my own. We watched Thomas the Tank Engine. We read the original books. We read the new books. We were upset when George Carlin was no longer Mr. Conductor. And there it is. We were upset when Ringo Starr was no longer the conductor. We didn't like change.
I like the man in the top hat.
Sir Topham Hatt.
Sir Topham Hatt.
Yep.
That is an amazing name.
And what was the best praise you could ever give an engine?
You're very useful.
Yes.
You're very useful.
There was no Thomas the Tank Engine comic.
Dude,
though.
I'm going to go start telling that to everybody. That's going to be my new go-to.
You are very,
very useful.
I want my toes in the water and my ass in the sand. I'm sorry.
Wait, I never heard that.
That's
on
not
Thomas
useful
the Tank
at all.
Engine.
Jeepers, what do you know about that? There's a hole in my rubber duck.
Joe, what are you reading?
We had a theme this
we
week.
We have a theme
you know?
This week. This week, we're going to talk about comic strips.
Now,
stripping comics? Hey, now.
One of the podcasts and radio shows that I enjoy is a BBC show that's been going on forever called Desert Island Discs. It recently made the news because Paul McCartney was a guest. And the number one album that he said he would bring to a desert island was John Lennon's song, Beautiful Boy, to which everybody went, aww. But Joe and I, a few years ago, did Desert Island Comics, what comic runs we would bring to a desert island. And Jin is very much an aficionado of comic strips as opposed to comic books, although she's learning.
You really, like, set those expectations pretty high right out the gate.
What, that you're learning?
That I'm an aficionado.
I have heard you talk about comic strips.
You have heard me talk about a lot of things.
But I've heard you talk about comic strips with authority.
I don't know that I can speak on anything with authority.
You spoke on Nancy with authority.
Except maybe being a jackass.
At a level much like Dennis Kitchen when he talked about Nancy before he started publishing Nancy collections.
That's because I have a feud with Guy Gilchrist that he doesn't know about.
A best kind, and he won't give you any lip.
I know.
Now, for the, you got to remember that the people who listen to this primarily listen to comic books. So who is it you're having a feud with and why?
Guy Gilchrist?
Yes.
I'm sure he's a very nice person. He's this honky-tonk looking motherfucker in a cowboy hat.
who draws
He's a. I'm sure he's a very nice person. He draws
nice honky tonk
Muppet Babies comic books or something. I'm not sure. He took over the Nancy comic strip at one point, which if you read like the old Nancy comic strips,
by Dean Bushmiller,
right? Like the art is very. It has this kind of like charming but kind of stiff quality to it. It's just they're really funny. Nancy is a shit. Her friends are shits. They, you know, they do shitty things like kids do, and it's really funny and kind of irreverent, I guess. So that word gets thrown around a lot. But no, he took over the strip at some point, and it's turned into, you know, this is kind of a running joke on our podcast with Root and I. It's turned into this kind of rah-rah America, glurgy, you know, overly sentimental garbage, you know? I mean, I hate...
Is it better or worse than Mallard Fillmore?
I think it's worse. Do they even still make Mallard Fillmore? Is that...
Oh, yes.
I haven't looked at the newspaper in
You
forever.
Should check out gocomics.com because a lot of strips you can go there for free. Or if you pay the monthly thing, they'll email you like 11 of your favorite strips. But it's kind of a cool place to go just to find out if a strip is even still being published.
I hate saying anything negative. Like, I know it's funny.
What?
I know it's funny to rant, but I'm trying to, like, be less negative. But I just,
who are you and what have you done with our beloved Jin?
I know, right? But it's just that, I mean, you have the character that Root likes to talk about, the character Phil Fumble, who was originally like an author insert. And he was he was Fritzy's boyfriend, this kind of goofy, you know, kind of comic relief character. Kind of short, dumpy, kind of funny looking. And when Guy Gilchrist brought him back into the strip, he started out the way he did originally. And over time, he quickly morphed into this giant beefcake, square jawed, you know, youth minister that, you know, takes care of homeless people. And it brought a lot of religious content into the strip. And it just really feels like he turned the strip into like a mouthpiece for his personal views. He rewrote some of the Sluggo's backstory. So he's raised by these two like uncles that are truckers on the road, and they're Vietnam vets, and they wear these stupid hats that say Vietnam vets on them all the time. And the dog has an American flag bandana, and it's just like, could you really just beat me over the head anymore with this, you know? Like, so it just really doesn't feel like anything like, you know, the older strips, and I don't know. It's just kind of like a lot of the message boards and some of the sites I like to read on the internet also kind of just they use Nancy, like modern Nancy, as kind of a whipping boy, but it's just I don't know. It's funny to have like a running joke of something that you dump on, I know, but it's so hard not to, and I really want to not do that anymore. I don't really want to
disparage
someone else's work. I know it's okay. It's,
you know, because I've got Vince Coletta.
Not everything is for everybody.
Right. And Vince Coletta was for no one.
And I don't think if he had just invented this comic strip out of thin air and it was his thing, I would just say, well, that's your thing. It's not for me, obviously. It's for a different audience. I think the offensive part comes from the fact that this is a legacy strip that somebody else took over, and it doesn't feel like they're making any, not only are they not making any effort to like really stay true to the source material or the original spirit of it, but they've actually turned it into like a mouthpiece for their own little personal axe to grind. And it's just like, do I really need another thing in my life that's just flag waving, rah, rah, you know, overly sentimental, boy, things sure suck now, they were sure better in the old days, you know, like, this is a comic strip truly written for baby boomers, I guess, at this point.
Now, I was never as big a fan of Nancy as other people, and I remember until it was, I think it might have been our first convention. At the after party, we had publisher Dennis Kitchen there, and he was there with Milton Greep, who was a co-owner of Capital City Distribution. And we were at the after party, and they were talking, and I was at the same table as them, and they started talking about Nancy. And I was smart for my, which, you know, back then, wow, I kept my mouth shut and just listened. And Dennis Kitchen talked for about an hour and a half about why he loved the strip, because everything about it was iconic. The hobos were what you imagine. When you say the word hobo, you imagine the hobo that Ernie Bushmiller drew. The house was the bare minimum needed to look like a house. He's the one who introduced me to the three rocks.
Right.
There are three rocks in the background to make sure that there is a background of some kind. It was the simplest strip, and the reason was so it could be reduced in size for smaller papers. For like small town papers, they could have the strip and print it really small and it would still be identifiable, much like Peanuts did at the same time.
Don't get me started on Peanuts.
I won't get you started on Peanuts. But it was one of those where the artist didn't just think about, oh, I'm going to do this strip to, you know, have a long run. It was, I am marketing, and I am going to create my art in a commercially sound way. And to me, the weird thing about Nancy was I first read Nancy in the comics. And in the comics, we've talked about in the past, they were by Ogden Whitney, who would do these really wonderful fantasy stories, and then you'd read the strip and you go, this isn't the same. I like the comic better. So I always read the comic strip with that in mind.
See, I've never read the comic books.
The comic books are amazing and nothing like the strip. They're more like a kind of a twisted version of the Uncle Scrooge type stories. And Drawn and Quarterly reprinted a lot of the stuff, and it's just beautiful. And Drawn and Quarterly does this does an amazing job with their packaging, because the artist Seth does the book design, so it has that very classic like 30s and 40s New Yorker book design. We've gone way off topic.
This is the thing I need in my life.
We haven't even got to the topic.
This is the thing I need in my life.
What, the Nancy comics?
Yeah.
I will dig them up, but boy, you've got a stack of comics already.
You know what?
Says the guy with half of his house is being propped up by his comic and comic book collection.
Yeah, that's comic books holding your roof up.
Boy.
But back to the Desert Island discs. Joe and I did Desert Island comics, and I thought since Jin is a comic strip aficionado and a comic strip artist.
What do you mean that word?
Yes, we would do Desert Island comic strips. What five complete runs of a comic strip would you bring to a desert island?
Who took over Nancy after Bushmiller passed away?
Let me take a look.
I was asking Jin.
I don't know off the top of my head. I know there was a period of time where it was being drawn by another artist before Guy Gilchrist. And there was
it was about the same time they tried to like redo Pogo and... The reason I bring up because it was one strip in that particular era, and this always drives me crazy because there's always that one strip you remember you'd love a copy of where I think Nancy was just walking down the street eating a sandwich and Sluggo goes, "Hey, Nancy, what kind of sandwich you got?" And she stops and opens her mouth wide and he looks in shock and runs away and she's thinking to herself, "That's funny, I thought he liked bologna." I mean, I have my. That's the way my aunt and my mom would react. You know, "Hey, what kind of sandwich you got?"
Yeah.
Ah! All right, Joe?
No, I'm pretty sure I did not do Nancy after, what's his name, passed on.
You and I know the artist who drew Nancy after Bushmiller passed away. Al Plastino.
Ooh.
He was a Superman artist in the 40s and 50s. And then, let's see, the strip has continued to the present day with different writers and artists. Mark Lasky briefly handled the strip. Jerry Scott handled the strip for a short time. And then Guy and Brad Gilchrist took over in 1995. Here's my favorite quote about Nancy from artist Wally Wood. "By the time you've decided not to read it, you've already read it." It was that simple and that easy to read. But yeah, Al Plastino was the artist on Nancy for quite a long time after Bushmiller passed away and drew in the same style. So he went from Superman to Nancy. But shall we do the Sid
and Nancy?
Now that is a comic strip that I would want to read. Joe, get somebody on that right away.
We got our best people working on it.
I'm actually surprised no one has done that before, and they probably have. Desert Island strips.
Yeah.
We'll start with number five and go to number one.
Oh, we're doing them in an order?
You want to do them round robin, or just are you going to hog
Let's
everything?
Let's do them round robin.
Okay.
Otherwise, each of us will just talk forever, and the other two will play on Facebook.
You didn't post the video for last week.
It is still, let
me take
percolating?
A look here. It is processing 89%.
Okay. So,
cool,
so we're doing,
your chat.
We're doing these. Ah, we're doing
Have
these in an order.
Have you ever tried to eat a clock? It's very time consuming.
Joe.
Stop.
Joe, why do you hate us, Joe?
It's hurtful.
Look, we're talking about a thing I know about, though I am not an aficionado.
Aficionado is someone who really loves stuff.
So we're going to... Okay, whatever. So we're going to talk about... They're in an order? I have to pick an order?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I got to put these in an order then.
Joe, do you have yours ready? Or
I have mine
I go
ready, first? But I don't play the order game.
All right.
Mine aren't really in any particular order, too, so I'm just going to pick them at random.
Yeah, you said. Okay. Bring five, and I got the five.
That's what I did. I made my notes today. I thought about it all day.
Oh,
yeah.
No, you didn't. You were making funny voices all day.
I was not.
Hey, that's a worthy pursuit.
I was thinking about talking on the show tonight, and I even took a nap so I would be awake. I am putting in the effort here. I want you to acknowledge that.
I will acknowledge that, but I do know you were talking in funny voices
tonight. I was this morning.
I like funny voices.
I'm not.
Joe!
I like funny voices.
Uh-huh.
Joe, please begin.
Number one, Peanuts.
Peanuts.
I love Peanuts. I grew up with Peanuts. One of my fondest memories as a kid was going over to my grandma's house, and she would take me to a store, and I would get a Peanuts paperback, and they ran anywhere from 50 cents to 75 cents, and I'd get one of them horrible TV dinners, and it was always a choice because the cool ones had hamburger, French fries, and then, like, some tart. But the...
I'd like some tart.
The meatloaf ones...
I am some tart.
Had chocolate cake in them. And I was like, why isn't the chocolate cake with the hamburger and French fries? Well, I always chose hamburger and French fries. I mean, these things had to be made of some type of nuclear goop because they usually turned out, unlike your microwavable slop you call, you know, food today. So I enjoy Peanuts. I've got to work on filling in the rest of my hardcover run of the Fangraphics line because they just finished the Peanuts run, and I guess there's one more volume coming with some of Schultz's other stuff that he did, like Little Folks, which I have a collection of. That was a strip he did for the St. Paul, I think it was Pioneer Press, or two papers, Pioneer Press and Dispatch. And when Schultz asked for more prominent placing and a little bit more money, they kind of said, goodbye, which is why you never saw a Peanuts strip again in the St. Paul paper. It was always in the Minneapolis one instead. He did another strip, which I can't recall, where he actually drew teenagers, and this one was more of a religious theme.
I've seen some of that.
I bought all these books. They are from, you can get them from the Schultz Museum, and I believe the last book that Fangraphics will have come out this fall will include those. But I've already got them. I'll probably pick it up just because it's a fun collection. It is neat because there's a lot of different strips in there that I never read. Being that I always read these paperback books, they always had certain runs. They would drop certain strips. It was really willy-nilly. You never had any idea how to do it. With Fangraphics collection, it's the first time you had the whole run complete. And it's just, it's fun to read, especially things that, you know, strips that I've never read. Plus, most of the books I read and this was like in the 70s, were reprinting stuff from the 60s, which I had no idea. I thought they were reprinting contemporary stuff. So like when you get up to the part where Peppermint Patty shows up and then a rerun Van Pelt shows up, I didn't realize those characters had been around for years. I thought they had just showed up in the comic strip. So that would be one for me. I mean, that would be plenty of reading. And the fact that the entire strip is out is something that's way cool. And Jen, what would be one on your list of top five?
So my first pick, I guess to pick maybe like the number five, I'm going to say Classic Phantom, which I know is like a weird pick for me because I usually like kind of gag strips, but I read on a message board and a lot of people post old comics, and I know I mentioned this a little bit when I picked the Phantom comic from the Free Comic Book Day stash of stuff to read. But I really like Classic Phantom strips, the ones from the newspaper. So they have kind of like an interesting, kind of weirdly stiff art style. And I don't know. I can read the little blurb here about it from, I guess this is on Comics Kingdom, you can read them. So they actually run in some newspapers, I guess. But
yes, friend of the show, Scary Terry Beatty, was doing the Phantom strip for a while. It is now passed over to Mike Manley, who used to draw at Marvel, including the superhero book Darkhawk.
But I really like both the vintage strips and the current ones. I couldn't tell you anything about the storyline because I'll go through and read a bunch of it and then won't read any again for a while. It's kind of just how my attention span drifts around. But since we're picking stuff we're going to read on a desert island, you know, so it's like, well, I'm going to just read the whole thing. But that's very intelligent commentary from me. I like Phantom. I don't really care for superhero stuff, but for some reason, the characters, especially like, you know, with the vintage strips, the old hairstyles, and hear all this stuff going on outside my place, the old hairstyles and the old cars and everything, I enjoy classic Phantom. Do you have anything to say about it?
I've never really gotten a newspaper that has it. I've read the comics, because King Features tries every few years to get the Phantom to do well in comic books, and it never really does. But I think my favorite of the comic book runs, Peter David wrote a run at DC in the late 80s that really sort of gave you the history and the reason for the Phantom and why he's so different from every other character, because it's a legacy character. Each Phantom, his child, then later becomes the Phantom. And he's thought of as immortal, which is where the name The Ghost Who Walks comes from.
Yeah, I thought that was cool, but like I was reading some discussion about it with some people a while back, and they were talking about the length of time the strip has been running and like which Phantom they're on. And you would think for like they've got the perfect story in there to the perfect kind of mechanism to change the character up periodically. But yet they're talking and it's like been the same guy for like 50 or 60 years.
Yeah, that happens.
It's kind of like sitting at Corey's place and listening to him tell stories. You feel like you've been there 50 or 60 years.
Bite me.
Why are you so mean today, Joe?
No reason.
Uh-huh.
Not freaking and geeking yet.
Okay. Corey, what's your first pick?
For the longest time, and probably still is, my favorite comic strip in the whole world is Doonesbury. Not just because of the political humor, not just because of the length of time and how it wove current events into, but I was thinking about it recently, and the characters are so rich and complex and almost real that I would like to have if I was going to be stuck on a desert island, I would like to spend my time with Mike Doonesbury and BD and Mark Slackmire and Duke and Honey and all of those characters and kind of live through their lives again. And while I'm upset that the Daily Strip is probably done forever, he still does Sunday strips. In the Sunday strips, he's not following the lives of his characters anymore. It's more an editorial cartoon. But it did end well with Doonesbury's daughter, Alex, having twins with a Iraq war vet. Kind of bringing it all full circle because the strip started as a war protest strip. But you can see how Gary Trudeau's art style evolved, how his writing style evolved. And there are so many strips from the 80s and 90s that should be paying him royalties, like Bloom County, because he developed a new sort of storytelling style in humor comics. It wasn't just gags, but it wasn't soap opera either, because the soap opera strips don't have jokes. He always had a joke, but he always had a story as well, and he mixed in all of this political stuff. It was a fantastic strip. It was a Pulitzer Prize winning strip, and I could not love it more.
I've gone through periods where I read Doonesbury. Not continuously. I think I probably quit reading it when I finally like didn't live somewhere where someone subscribed to the newspaper.
You know what the saddest thing about Doonesbury for me is?
Hmm.
I learned about the Vietnam War from Doonesbury.
None of the history classes
I ever took, you know, we got to World War II and it was like, hey, Summer, wait, I didn't tell you how it ends. We won! Yay! So I had to figure out what was this Vietnam thing. I mean, I was vaguely aware that my uncle had been there, I remember people rumbling about MASH saying, well, that's just based off of Vietnam, not Korea, which, again, had no idea what Korea was. But as I read through it, that's what started me thinking more on it. And, of course, back then it wasn't a matter of, okay, let's Google Vietnam War and figure out what's going on. I actually had to go to the library, which ironically is where I got my Doonesbury from. So I'd pick up all these different Doonesbury sets. It would always come out like there was a big Treasury-type edition, and they'd come back with smaller trade paperbacks. And they were complete, as far as I know, which was always a big thing for comic strip reprints to be complete, and especially for his, because they were usually segue. So I understood most of these characters. I knew who they were. And then I'd bring the library books back, and I'd get the next ones I could get, and so on and so on. I wonder what happened to Phil the Communist.
I don't know what happened with him.
He was in UN for a while.
Yep, he was in the UN. I don't remember what happened with him, but here's my favorite little weird thing. Remember in the mid-70s when all of the refugees from Vietnam were coming to the U.S.? And you had the baby, Kimmy?
Yeah.
Kimmy grew up to marry Mike Doonesbury.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that I like those little tie-in thingamabobs that work. So Doonesbury, my number five. Joe, what's your next strip?
I will stop and give an honorary mention to Dilbert. It did not make my top five, although it was pretty close. But number four, and again at no real order, would have to be Little Abner. Now, I have the Kitchen Sink Incomplete Little Abner collection. I have not jumped on the current reprints, even though I don't have the Sundays. Little Abner is one that I enjoyed for years. I've told the story about how my Scoutmaster would dazzle us with stories of the Shmoo. And I was kind of like, what is this Shmoo thing you're talking about? And, well, go check out the Little Abner strip. Now, I was aware of the Little Abner strip in the paper, which to me was cool because it had women with huge tatas. But to go back and actually look up when the Shmoo appeared, now I'm looking this up in old-fashioned microfiche. So basically the librarian would bring it to me. She taught me how to reel it up to the machine, and then I'd whip through the paper until I got to the comic strips. And then I'd read the Doonesbury, Little Abner. Then I'd fast forward to the next one, Little Abner. So on and so on. And then I get to the end of the year or whatever section of the microstrip, and I'd have to go get some more and bring it back and so on and so on. So finally, I was able to read the whole Shmoo storyline, its discovery, how the nations of the world were worried because it would stop people from buying and because they didn't need the toil, how they assassinated all the Shmoos, except for two that Little Abner kept, and then it rolled into the Sadie Hawkins storyline. Over the years, I've bought in the Shmoo comics. I've got the Dark Horse reprints of the Shmoo comic strip. So when Kitchen Sink came out and started doing the reprints of Little Abner, I mean, it was incredible to go all the way back from the beginning where it was really kind of crude and watch it slowly develop, watch the different concepts appear. There's always a wonderful piece in the beginning talking about just what was going on in society at the time, what the history was like. And I think I don't remember what the last year was. I have them sitting up in my bookshelf, but they're all spying in, so I can't read the last volume. But they didn't get to the end of the series, which annoys me no end. The Sunday strips have no continuity to the daily strips, so the newest reprints, who's doing it? Is it Dark Horse or Frame Graphics?
IDW.
Oh, I should have guessed. I mean, maybe when they finally get to where Kitchen Sink stops, I'll start picking them up. Maybe that'll be one of my freakings years from now that I didn't jump in at the beginning, and now it's going to cost me an arm and a leg to pick them all up. I just don't feel like I need to replace the Kitchen Sink ones because they're so wonderful. And just, I don't know, I know towards the end of the strip, because, you know, I read that Al Capp book by Michael Schumacher and Dennis Kitchen. He just went on a right-wing rant, and the comic strips weren't as much fun anymore. But I still would like to read them. But just for what I have now, I think, was there 25 volumes in the Kitchen Sink run?
27. Because I have them as well.
I think I'm missing one or two, and I should be able to pick them up somewhere on eBay. But that would be one I would definitely pick up because it's just a lot of fun to read. By the time I got to volume 27, I'd be ready to go back and read it over again. Jim?
Okay, so my next strip is Prince Valiant, which is probably not another one you were expecting from me.
I can see that, though,
yeah.
And I will tell you why when you're done.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, Prince Valiant was always in the newspaper, and it was one of those ones where you just look at, like, these massive walls of text with, like, the pictures, and my eyes would just kind of slide over it and go on to the next thing. So again, in this message board thread where there's a lot of discussion of comic books, someone would reliably post Prince Valiant, and I actually started reading it. And really looking at the art, and especially the art, is just incredible. But once you start reading it, it really has a good story. It's another one like Phantom where I'll pick it up or, you know, click on it or however you want to say and read big chunks of it and then not come back to it for a while. And I know there's some good book collections at some point that I want to pick up and actually sit down and then read through the entire thing or, you know, more of it than I have. But the art just grew on me. Really have appreciation of all the detail and effort that goes into the art. The characters, I like Prince Valiant. I like his daughters. It's fairly progressive for, you know, you would expect for like a kind of medieval themed comic. You know, his wife is kind of a warrior princess. You know, she kind of holds her own. She comes from an island. There are all these, you know, female fighters and everything. But they don't make a big deal out of it. It just is what it is. So I really appreciated the story and the art, and it's not something that would typically appeal to me. But there's just something about it that's really, really attractive. And, you know, I've even seen some images of actually the originals of the artwork, and it's just really impressive. There's an element, too, that I've read other people discussing, where I'm remembering some of the last times I read it, you know, Prince Valiant is fighting this, like, terrible beast in the jungle, and ordinarily, you know, you would have it would be a dragon or something like that. And they describe these beasts and they turn out to be just like a giant gorilla, you know, but to them it's very foreign and exotic and almost mythical because they don't know what a giant gorilla is or something like that. So it's just really well done, well told, beautiful art and something that I just didn't appreciate as a child, but that's really grown on me as an adult, come back and re-looking at the comics page and re-exploring a lot of this stuff. So, and this has been around a long time too, like Phantom.
It is currently being written by Mark Schultz, who did the unbelievably beautiful comic Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, or Xenozoic Tales. For the longest time, it was drawn by Gary Gianni, who worked at Dark Horse, and it's now actually being drawn by Thomas Yates, who's probably best known by comic book fans as an artist on Swamp Thing before Alan Moore took over. And Yates is another artist who's just... They've been very lucky at having some phenomenal artists who take over after Hal Foster passed away. And when we were thinking about this, I said, you know, there are certain strips I think of, and I think when the focus of the strip is the art, I always think that's probably one that Jin really likes. Because it's kind of rare anymore for a comic strip to have really beautiful art. Because you've got stuff like Dilbert and other strips where it's, okay, it can be reduced down and it's very quirky. Whereas there are some people who still want to do that classic comic strip art from the 30s and 40s where, you know, you'd look at the Sunday paper and it would just be this beautiful, beautiful artwork.
I was always kind of fascinated with the soap opera strips when I was a kid for the same reason. You know, a lot of them, you know, particularly like Apartment 3G, which has been very sad to watch its art kind of deteriorate over time, and I think they finally, like, put it out to pasture, you know, this year, the end of last year, I can't recall. But back then, just the art on those, I didn't really read them, or as a kid, I had a hard time following or appreciating the story. But definitely Prince Valiant, I know at least when I actually would see it in the newspaper, it was a Sunday-only thing. It got a huge chunk of real estate in, like, the Sunday comics since it was in color. So I'm not familiar with if it had black and white art or how it ran.
Nope, it was always a Sunday-only strip.
Yeah.
It was full page until the 70s when it was cut to a half page. And I've seen the full page strips. I don't remember them as a kid. But I remember as a kid really liking it because it was King Arthur.
Yeah.
And although we've talked in the past about until I got into Marvel at about age 12, anything with a lot of dark shadows kind of scared me and freaked me out as a kid. I liked the cartoony art and the more realistic art. It was, oh, I don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
My number four is Flash Gordon. And Flash Gordon's had a lot of ups and downs, but I would have Flash Gordon for the original run, which is classic in every sense of the word. Every time they adapt Flash Gordon well, they go back to those original strips and the original story of Mongo is a planet coming toward Earth. And Flash Gordon, Dr. Zarkov, and Dale Arden go there, and they unite the planet of Mongo against Ming. You've got Lion Men and Hawk Men and Lizard Men and all of those things. But when I was younger and I first discovered those stories, it was for the adventure. Now I would just want it for one reason and one reason only, and that's the art by Alex Raymond. The more I have learned about comics history, the more you can look at early comic books, and a good two-thirds of the artists in comic books wanted to be Alex Raymond. They would steal poses. They would swipe. They would almost trace layouts and page design from Alex Raymond. And when you go back and you read the original, you see why. He was a master of art. Not only did the strip have a beautiful flow, but every panel itself, there's tons of detail and all of these wonderful ideas that seem a little hackneyed because they've been used over and over and over again. But when you go back to the original, you can see why this was just some burst of creativity. And even though the stuff that came after Raymond left is not as good, I would still want it just for that run he did. That's just, still to this day, I think it's one of the things, Kitchen Sink reprinted it back in the 80s, and every time it's gone out of print with a publisher, another publisher has picked it up and reprinted that run. Joe, what's your next strip?
I would pick Calvin and Hobbes, and I'm lucky because I do own the complete collection, which is kind of cool.
You know those big monster hardback books?
Yeah, that you could, like, prop a mobile home up with or just kill your neighbor if they annoy you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Just one of those strips that I really enjoyed. And even reading it nowadays, it gets kind of melancholic. And even when I see people doing tribute strips, like the one guy talks, it's a Calvin and Hobbes, he's in the attic, and suddenly he hears a growl and something pounces at him, and then you see it's obviously an adult Calvin picking up Hobbes, and he's thinking, I thought I lost you, buddy. And I mean, God, it just gets to me because it's one of those strips that maybe because the way he left, I want more. And I treasure what I've got now. And the fact that it did come out as a, you know, that monster sized book is pretty cool. I thought I would probably get rid of the other various trades and things that I picked up because every time a new collection come out, I'd be on it. But I just keep them around because, you know, The monster collections are fun. It's neat knowing I have them all. But when you just want to sit down and read one, they're like the omnibus. They're hard to carry around and just to sit back in bed and read one without crushing your sternum. So I'll keep the paperbacks with me. Jin?
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right.
I forgot it was my turn. Let me see. Which one do I want to do next? I want to talk about pickles. Are you familiar with pickles?
I am not.
I'm going to read a little, like, Wikipedia blurb on Google. It says, Pickles is a daily and Sunday comic strip by Brian Crane, focusing on a retired couple in their 70s, Earl and Opal Pickles. Pickles has been published since 1990. It's a cartoonier strip. Like it says, it's about this retired older couple. They've got, like, a grandson who's in the comic pretty frequently. The grandson's parents show up less often, so he's over, you know, with them a lot. There's a dog and a cat character. It's kind of one of those cutesy strips, sort of in the vein of, like, it's linking, you know, people that read this also search for Zits, Baby Blues, Luann. There's something about Pickles that really appeals to me. The couple, I guess I'm going to bring out, like, some of my family issues with my top three picks. They're all really charming examples of like, what I feel are realistic, loving, well-portrayed family dynamics that are, they're endearing and funny without being sappy or overly cutesy or kind of beating you over the head with it. So the older couple, like, they pick on each other frequently. Like, the joke in the comic is some kind of wisecrack they're making about each other. But it never comes across as being mean-spirited. You know, it's funny in a well-portrayed how you would pick on your partner that you truly care about, but you're still kind of giving them a hard time. So that, and I enjoy the dynamic between them and the kid. I feel that's well done, too. A lot of times, kids in comics are so insufferable or just not realistically portrayed. So it just feels like a very heartfelt, well-done comic. It makes me laugh in a sincere way, not in a... There's nothing mean-spirited or overly sentimental or overly cutesy or forced about it. So if you haven't read it before, it's worth checking out. It's probably the kind of thing you might see clipped out and put on your grandma's fridge with a magnet occasionally. But I really appreciate it, and maybe I'm getting old. But, you know, going back to Joe's talking about Calvin and Hobbes, the art is just incredible. I really admire him. You know, I admire the way he ended the strip rather than letting it turn into like a shambling corpse. When he felt that he had done everything he wanted to do, and especially like the Sunday strips were just beautiful. But I never really connected with Calvin and Hobbes. I don't know if it's because I was never a young boy, or what. But I liked reading it because, especially when he would draw dinosaurs or, you know, some of the fantastic stuff Calvin would imagine, you just have to admire, you know, the artwork. But I never really connected with that strip in the way some people did. I know Matt was just nuts about it, and he really bonded with his dad over that strip. So I think there's something in particular about Calvin and Hobbes that really appeals to boys and young men. I just never really connected with it. I just wanted to get that in there before we got too far away from the discussion of Calvin and Hobbes. So Pickles is my pick for just being a kind of a good family dynamic, a kind of a funny slice of life strip without being mean-spirited about it. Corey?
My next strip is actually very mean-spirited.
Mm.
Crazy Cat. Crazy Cat is one of those strips that you've heard about.
Duck your head, Corey.
Sorry,
he's
throwing bricks.
I am.
Crazy Cat, I don't know where I read it as a kid because it wasn't in newspapers. It was long gone. But I read it in something as a kid, and it haunted my memory. It was one of those things where I would go to the library and look for books on it. And finally, my mother took me to the library, I don't even remember where. But they had a big Crazy Cat book, and I borrowed it and just devoured it. And then in the 80s, Eclipse started reprinting the Sunday strips in these really nice volumes, and then they went under, and Fantagraphics picked up from where they left off. Crazy Cat is a very simple strip. It's about a cat who may or may not be female. Officer Pup, who loves and protects Crazy Cat but never shows it. And Ignatz the Mouse, who also loves Crazy Cat and shows it by throwing bricks at his head. And it's set in a surreal desert, and it's amazing how much they're able to get out of it. The characters speak in weird dialect. The art is so minimalistic it borders on surreal. And even when it ran in the papers, it was not liked by people. It was in the William Randolph Hearst newspapers. And legend is that it got just letters and letters and letters of people who hated it. But the publisher, William Randolph Hearst, it was his favorite strip. So as long as he was alive and the artist wanted to draw it, it was a full-size Sunday strip. And the books from Fantagraphics, they've gone back and they've published all the Sundays. They've gone back and republished the stuff that Eclipse did. And they're in the bookcase by my bed because every so often I like to take out a volume and just read a few strips and just marvel at the creativity and the artistry and just... It's one of those things where you either get it or you don't, and I get it. And it's something I would like to have if I were stranded on a desert island, just because I would like to kind of revel in that artwork. Joe, what's your next pick?
I want me some Far Side. Another book in a mega collection that I just absolutely love. Just this silly humor, I mean, the cows. And I hope... And I think the big set has all the strips that he couldn't publish. I know there was one that they eventually did. It's like there's this spider with a scary little sack on his head, and he's just had scared his friend. He goes, "Ha! Did I scare your friend?" And behind his friend's a bunch of spider web going down, 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 down into a big pile underneath the tree. Obviously, he did scare him. When my wife was in the hospital for what we thought was an appendicitis attack, it wasn't, but they took it out anyways. I figured as long as you're going in, you might as well do something. And I went home and I picked out that prehistoric Far Side, and I ran across four of the strips that he didn't get published because of, well, you'll figure out the theme as I describe them. The first one, there's a whale with a real shit-eating grin on his face and huge bubbles behind him, and another one, "Kevin, was that you?" Another one has a kid playing a tuba sitting next to an outhouse, and everybody else is way off in the distance looking. And I don't know if I was just stressed out or what, but I read these cartoons and I laughed myself sick for a half hour. And then I reread another one, and I laughed for 20 minutes and just went on and on. And the next day, my wife, you know, and she's got the stitches in her, and she's like, "What'd you do last night?" "Oh, I just went home, and I was kind of bummed. So I read some Far Side." And I started reading the one, and it had this thing where this whale was smiling and big bubbles, and I, "Kevin, was that you?" And then another one, a kid in a tuba, and another, and then I look over, and Chris is in utter tears holding her gut because she's laughing so hard. And I'm just going on and on describing these stupid cartoons.
Really is a master of like non sequitur humor.
Oh, just brilliant. Just fun stuff. And I just, like I said, I have the prehistoric Farside. I had all the collections. These are ones I actually disposed of, because once I got a hold of that big, massive hardcover, I figure, hey, I'm good. And oddly enough, the first person to open them up and read them is my daughter, Dana. So at least I know where she gets some of her humor from.
Cow tools.
They're the two bears.
That strip that he hated because he spent the rest of his life explaining cow tools.
The one with the two bears sitting in a beat-up, rusted-out automobile. I'm telling you, man, we fix this thing up, we could really pick up some babes in this thing. Bunch of cows standing around smoking. One goes, car. I'll get down on all four.
Yeah, I just, Farside is one of those strips that you read, and you just wonder, how the hell did he think of this shit? You know, like, just what kind of, just where does this come from? Because it's so, random isn't even the right word. It's just like, where does this come from? And there's been so many knockoffs of people that just, like, try to copy that, mimic it, and just so painful. It's like, that really was just not a flash in the pan because it stuck around for so long, but just such a unique, you know, comedic mind. You're not going to interrupt me this time, Joe. I had one, like, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, taped on my mirror forever, and it said the Ice Crusades. And it was just a bunch of, you know, like, crusaders on ice skates. And that was it. It was not belabored. There was no elaboration, no context. It was just a bunch of crusaders on ice skates. And the caption said, the Ice Crusades. And for some reason, this was, like, the funniest fucking shit to me. I would laugh. It was taped in my mirror. It had been there forever. And every time I saw it, I would laugh. And they were all like that. It was like you didn't need to explain it. You didn't need a lot of words. There was no story. It was just these random, how does he come up with this? I don't know. And I really struggled to not put Farside on this list because I knew you guys are going to name Peanuts and Calvin and Hobbes and Farside and all that. So I left it off, but really it probably would be in there. But yeah, so...
What I like most on these collections, and I don't know about Calvin and Hobbes because I haven't opened it, I love it when the creators actually will comment on the strips. Like the four I was talking about before, he just said, these four were not accepted by my editor. See if you can figure out why. Or the one about the spider, he said, this one was originally rejected, but later on, they ran it anyways. Go figure.
The one I've seen the most... And maybe it's because I was in college and took psych classes. And, like, for the first 3 years of college, I was a math minor until I got my head out of my ass and switched it to an English minor. Was the one that School for the Gifted and the kid pushing against the door that
yes,
says Paul.
Yes.
Every professor I had that I liked had that strip up on their door.
Yep.
And it's the simplicity of the gag that helps it. But you guys talk about you don't know where this came from. If you go back and you read the original National Lampoon, they had one-panel gag strips that were, I'm not going to say they were just like that, but they were very similar in that you take a strange premise and you boil it down to the basic gag. B. Kilbin did that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the cartoonist, but it was a National Lampoon book that collected all their comics, and it was That's Not Funny, That's Just Sick. And it's a restaurant, and on the menu it says Frog's Legs, and there's a frog on a cart with no legs and the two irons that just staring at the people. And to me, it's almost like a direct line from that sort of non-mainstream, almost underground, to Farside bringing that type of humor into the mainstream. And you had a lot of surreal comedians at the time. Farside always reminded me of like a comic strip version of Stephen Wright's humor. So there was just something in the water in the 80s.
You know, I always liked that one you mentioned with the School for the Gifted where he's pushing on the door. Because you could actually have like a philosophical discussion about that strip,
yeah.
And highly intelligent people like their tendency to like miss the obvious and overthink things. So it's kind of it works on multiple levels, you know. And there's a lot of them that are like that too, where you can kind of actually kind of take it and run with it, and actually say, oh, there's a lot more there than I thought there originally was. Then you have like you know cow tools.
My number two is Peanuts, which we've talked about already. And the reason Peanuts is on the list, not just because there's 50 years of it, but out of all the strips, I think this is the one that shows an artist's evolution the most, both good and bad. Because Peanuts started, and the characters were very different from the way they were 20 years later.
I love the characters early evolved Peanuts. Over time.
The first, I think, 10 to 15 years is amazing. And then once you get into the late 60s, the strip changes, and I still like it. And I'm still, like Joe said, there's this thing about when you read it as a kid, especially in the 70s, you just connected with Charlie Brown so much. And there was all, I don't know what to kind of call the character, the kind of nebbishy loser, because I think that's why so many of us connected with Spider-Man, because here's Peter Parker, well, you know, he's kind of a nerdy dweeb who can't seem to get his life together, and you had Woody Allen who would portray himself as a nerdy dweeb who can't get his life together, and Charlie Brown is the eternal loser.
See, I but identify
early much... early strips of him as a smartass.
Right, that's what I was going to say. The first two or three years, Charlie Brown is an absolute shit. And those are the ones that I enjoy more. Snoopy looks and acts like a dog that eats candy. But Charlie Brown is he's a smartass. He's a troublemaker, you know? Like, that's more, maybe I identify with that more. He's an asshole. He's a little asshole. So am I. You know, that's when it starts to lose me, is when Charlie Brown makes that evolution into the woe is me, good grief, you know, kind of, and maybe I need to learn more about Schultz, and maybe I need to sit down and just read this from start to finish, because I feel like I'm missing something.
There is an a biography of Schultz that I read, and when you read it, it takes some of the allure away from it, because you realize Schultz thought of himself as Charlie Brown. Lucy, especially when she was being the fuss-budget little bitchy kid, that was his wife at the time. As soon as he divorced his wife, and went on to his second one, that's the last time Charlie Brown ever had a stomachache. You find out all these little things that just were appearing in the strip take some of the fun away from it.
See, that would actually probably add to it for me, because when I have that connection with the artist, I have more empathy with the material.
Well, I got the book right here. Next time I see you, I'll borrow it to you.
Okay.
Because it's a pretty thorough one, and it's the other thing that's really kind of interesting, and I've talked with Corey about this. No matter how you told Charles Schultz that you loved his strip, he would not believe you.
Right.
He never believed he was as beloved as he was. Part of it because he felt that if he got rid of the inner angst that drove the strip, he would lose the magic that had the strip. And maybe he just didn't notice this as time went on. But that's why all of a sudden you started getting strips about Peppermint Patty and her troubles in school, because that was what was happening in his life with his kids. And Charlie Brown being the little scamp or the loser or whatever kind of disappeared into the past. And, you know, I mean, Charles Schultz is probably, well, he's been teased a lot because of all the comic strip people we talked about. He's probably one of the most popular in terms of merchandising, and still is today. Whether, you know, it's almost like Calvin and Hobbes was the opposite of Schultz. He didn't, his strip was his strip. He didn't want anything else done with it.
Right.
So, But yeah, you couldn't. Schultz probably went to his grave not believing the praise that was heaped upon him. Good,
the
bad,
other
and
reason,
different. Who knows?
We're hijacking
the other reason
discussion.
That actually, I would want.
Did he skip
peanuts.
You?
No, he didn't skip me.
Okay.
I interrupted.
The other reason not.
it's fun, isn't it? I apologize.
I know, it is fun.
It, you,
it is fun.
I know, just call me out if I get too bad about it. I'm sorry, Corey, you were saying?
The other reason that I wanted to bring the strip is because, aside from the fact that it's entertaining, aside from the fact that there are huge gaps in my knowledge of the strip where I would want to read, so there would be all this new stuff, Peanuts may be the most influential art strip since Flash Gordon. Because if you look at, you could almost do a demarcation line of comic strips before Peanuts and after Peanuts. Peanuts brought that one panel gag strip sensibility to the comic page. Because if Joe could probably talk a little more about it, Schultz actually started doing one panel strips for the Sunday Evening Post and wanted to break into there, but it was harder than he thought and was able to get into comic strips. But
oh,
it was that.
Can I ask this road a quick one?
Sure.
What famous panel strip did he actually have one published in?
That is a good question. Was it Parade?
No, I'm actually thinking the actual comic strip. He sent it into the strip and they used one of his solicitations.
I don't know.
He got...
Oh, wait, no. Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yep, he got a single panel talking about his dog, Sparky, who would actually eat nuts and bolts. I knew you knew that.
But strips, even the humor strips, if you look at Lil Abner, as Joe talked about, Lil Abner was a comedy strip, but the art was very detailed and very busy, and there was a lot going on. Schultz was very much, nope, here's your line, this is all you get.
I appreciate your mention of, like, or Joe's mention of, like, how Schultz's personal life was put into Peanuts in a way that's not readily apparent until you learn about him. Because I still have a theory that, like, you know, it's not so much of a theory, but, like, all work is ultimately biographical in some way. And a lot of these strips, you know, you don't recognize, like, how autobiographical it actually is until you take the time to learn, or, if, you know, somebody writes a biography or whatever. So that's an interesting element that actually adds more appeal to me. Because I tend to be more interested in things that are reality-based. You know, I want to learn about real people. I want to learn about real events. So when you add that layer to it, it actually, like, increases its appeal for me.
Joe, your final strip.
You've already made a snarky comment about it, but God bless it, I love it. I love Bloom County. Absolutely love it. To me, it's one of the most humorous strips, even if it got a little over-reliant on Opus towards the end of it. So go back to the early Bloom Counties, which I remember, I thought we actually started at the St. Paul paper in the beginning, but apparently we didn't. But that was always the last strip I would read. I would go down, start on the left side, go down, and come up the right side, because Bloom County would be top right. And I just enjoyed it. I love the IDW collection. I have all of them, and I will probably pick up. I think I picked up. What did he do after he did Outland? Which
he did Outland.
Was fun, and then he brought Opus back and got even more fun. And then he did Opus, and of course now he's doing it online, which I guess they're going to gather together.
Yes, IDW is going to be publishing them. From what I read, it's going to be a year. So every year you'll get a new Bloom County book.
And again, with the books that IDW did, and again, I have the, I think I have, I might have got rid of them, the actual, when they'd come out in like booklet form, and then they'd come out in a treasury size. I'm just going to buy them in IDW. I actually, Carl, I don't know, did you ever play the Billy and the Boingers when you were in college radio?
I didn't play it on the air because my show was very different from that. Not to get too deep into the type of radio show I did, because we've talked about it a million times and get way off topic. But
damn, he's getting good, Diamond.
Wait, which one are we on? Because I've only talked about three, but Joe said,
did you say you're
number one?
You did skip her. When we started talking Farside, I was talking Farside, Jin talked Farside, and then you jumped onto it.
I thought that Jin...
But I did... We were talking to Billy and the Boinger thing, and what I had done is it came in a flexi disc, which was inside the book, and I went to the production guys and said, guys, throw this, both these songs on a cart for me, because we'd play it on our morning show, which we had loose rules. And the programming director came up to me, and he was pissed as hell, said, where the hell did that come from? I said, well, I set it up for the morning show. Everybody's playing it. It's not part of the rotation. I don't like it. And I'm like, who cares? It's funny. how do you say his first name? Berkeley?
Burke Breathed.
Burke. He even attested to the fact that college radio stations were playing the snot out of it, which was kind of funny for a flexi disc. I don't know if you can still get the flexi discs. I was hoping it would be in one of the IDW books. But what I do like, again, with these different collections, the Treasuries and IDW, is that he does give commentary on the different strips, especially the ones that cause trouble, you know, that either got banned or altered for whatever reason. So that's my top five. Jin, let's catch up with you. Which are the next two for you?
Well, I can kind of talk about them together, I guess, since somehow I got mixed up. But I'm going to pick two more modern strips, Arlo and Janice and Cul-de-Sac. And I know I've mentioned Cul-de-Sac on the show before. But both of these, again, like Pickles, are strips that portray a really kind of a warm, funny, kind of genuine family dynamic. Arlo and Janice is about an older couple with adult children. Again, they kind of rib on each other in a very loving way. It's not always funny. The artists sometimes will do strips that are just kind of just here's a scene from everyday life kind of portrayed in a comic strip, which I know doesn't appeal to everybody. They're an older couple. They have grown children. They're still very much in love. They're still very much attracted to each other. Arlo is kind of a horn dog. And it's nice to see, you know, the artist will portray the wife going through the typical issues you would have, like, as an older woman. She has body image issues. She's uncomfortable with how she looks or how she feels or the fact that she's getting older and he's still very attracted to her. He still flirts with her. He still makes her feel good about herself. She's got, you know, a friend. She makes friends with her neighbor, the neighbor woman, and they talk about guys and that kind of thing. And it's nice to see. And again, maybe it's just because I'm getting older that I identify with this stuff more. And then Cul-de-Sac is just, Cul-de-Sac is just in the vein of Calvin and Hobbes. It's truly unique art style. The children, like Calvin, will tend to use adult language and adult phrasing to portray a very, very kind of really captures. Now, Cul-de-Sac centers around the main character, Alice, who's a little girl. She's kindergarten aged. And even though she uses, you know, bigger words and adult phrasing a lot of the time, it really captures what it's like to be a little kid and the feel of kind of her wonderment at the world. And, you know, she's got an older brother that's kind of OCD, neurotic. His name is Petey. He's a picky eater. And I can identify with a lot of Petey, you know, being a kind of neurotic kid myself. If you looked up charming in the dictionary or the encyclopedia, Cul-de-Sac would be there. It's not saccharine. It's not overly sentimental. It's just adorable, funny, charming, and just really kind of a spiritual follow-up to Calvin Hobbes, in the way that I think people identify with it, and it kind of recaptures the magic of being a little kid. And it's really funny in kind of an offbeat way too. It makes fun of a lot of kind of innocent things. The dad has a little tiny car, and his tiny car is kind of a running joke in the comic. The relationship between the parents is very well portrayed. The parents are very loving. They're very supportive of the kids, but they still occasionally give them a bit of a hard time or mess with them in the way adults will do. So I just bring it up over and over every time newspaper comics come up, but I just cannot get enough of Cul-de-sac. It's just probably one of the best things to be on the comic pages in a very long time.
Did you happen to read Arlo and Janice today?
I didn't, because I don't read a lot of these comics daily. A lot of times I think of them and I sit down and binge read a bunch of it at one time. So it's not necessarily something I follow every day, but if you're asking me what I'm going to sit and read in a big chunk at once in your desert island scenario, those are my picks.
Yeah. I do that with Luann. Like I said, Go Comics is a great place to go to catch up on stuff. So once I know like a year's worth of comics is passed, I'll sit down, go back to January 1st, and then just go forward. Occasionally I'll get glimpses in the paper. And what's interesting about Luann, kind of like For Better or For Worse, is that the characters age. And whereas For Better or For Worse is done now, and they're rerunning the older ones, For Luann, they're still doing that. The reason I mentioned Arlo and Janice is they did something today that I absolutely love. They kind of refer to another comic. And there was a comic, I'll have to come back. I forget what it's called, like Nine...
Chickwood Lane.
Thank you. Where one of the characters actively goes into another comic strip and back and forth, which I just absolutely love. But Arlo and Janice, what I'm getting to is, Arlo comes up, he's got this huge sandwich, and he's sitting down, and he goes, "Oh, I love this." And she says, "Wow, that looks like a pretty good sandwich." "Yeah, just like a Dagwood from Blondie." She's really, or "It's really stacked." And she gets that look on her face like, "Did you really just say that?" "No, I meant the sandwich, the sandwich." And that's just the type of thing my wife would misinterpret if I said.
Yeah.
Or like another one where they're getting ready to go for a run, and she's, "Okay, I'm ready to go." And he comes, and he's looking at her. He's got this smile. She rolls her eyes, lifts her shirt. "Yes, sports bra."
Yeah, exactly. I love that, because like they're obviously, you know, like I said, she's got these issues that are very realistic. This is stuff that people really go through, but they're still like so in love with each other, and he's still like so hot for her, even though they've been together forever and they're aging and all that. So, I mean, maybe it's just like, I wish I could have that someday. I don't know, but I really love Arlo and Janice. Yeah, I'm looking at the one you're talking about. She says, "Whoa, that BLT is stacked." Yeah, like Blondie.
Ah.
You know, like Dagwood sandwich.
Yeah. No, this is the sandwich.
Yeah.
Like Blondie. Oh.
You know, you mentioned Luann, and I really, Luann, she did age the characters, like, for better or for worse, though they've aged much more slowly, so they've been in high school forever and ever, and finally they decided to age them out and let them go to college. Luann, I'm really conflicted about. I love that comic when I was a kid, and I've even like gone back and looked at some of the ones prior to when I would read it. And it's one of the comics that, like Peanuts, I feel like the art was much better when it started. It was more cartoony, and it had a lot of character. And as the strip has gone on, the characters have gotten more realistically proportioned. And which is funny, because like Peanuts, usually the comics tend to get more cartoony over time and more stripped down, and Luann has made the opposite evolution. For Better or For Worse did the same. It was more cartoony in its beginning, and the characters became more realistic over time. But as Luann has gotten more realistic, I just found myself enjoying it less and less. You know, it was funny when the brother and sister had the kind of dynamic where they picked on each other. Now it's very much like, I don't even know if it's almost evolving into a soap opera strip, you know, where the jokes aren't very funny. There have been some characters recently You know, there was the art instructor character a while ago who kind of played on the LOL modern art sure is wacky and stupid and sucks, you know, making fun of that. It's got a little bit of another strip people that I discussions I follow like to talk about Rex Morgan, where the characters tend to have a lot of deus ex machina, like stuff is just handed to them conveniently. You know, Luann had the story arc with the nightclub where the parents buy the nightclub and all of a sudden here's a guy who's going to manage it for him. And here's this, you know, the character TJ, like his food truck that's like a money sink failure, like explodes and he gets a big insurance settlement. You know, just stuff just tends to like show up in their lives and get handed to them, and that's not really realistic. And it makes the characters really unlikable because it feels like their struggles are just kind of solved for them. And you realize, you start reading Luann and a lot of the characters like Tiffany, the cheerleader girl, she gets dumped on all the time for being a bitch or whatever. And after a while, she starts to become sympathetic. It's the same reason why I had a hard time after a point watching the Family Guy cartoon show on TV, because they just continually dump on Meg as a character. And after a while, it stops being funny. And you start to realize, like, what shitheads the other characters are. you start to be kind of repulsed by it. And I've kind of felt that way about Luann. It's like, well, she's supposed to be a sympathetic, likable character. But after a while, you're kind of like, yee, these characters are kind of obnoxious, you know, like, so yeah, it's been unfortunate because that was a comic strip that I really enjoyed when I was younger that I've just really, it's really lost its appeal for me as it's gone on. And it's like, maybe, I think his daughter, Greg Evans' daughter, writes it now too. And he still draws it, but I just really don't find the art appealing anymore either. Cause it's like, it's kind of reached this uncanny valley point where, like, it's not cartoony enough for, like, the anatomy problems, or, you know, it's become very stiff and not very expressive, and the characters are kind of angular, and it really was very appealing when it started. It was more rounded and cartoony, and that's unfortunate. And, you know, I think that's why, you know, maybe sometimes people should maybe just start a new project when they get burned out, rather than running the stuff that they do in the ground. And, you know, I know maybe that's why my work is kind of all over the place, because I, you know, you get tired of doing the same thing over and over, which is fine. You can do like Calvin and Hobbes and just say that, you know, I've said what I needed to say and I don't want to run this into the ground. It's time for me to move on and do something else or retire. It's okay to stop, is what I'm saying. It's okay to do something else, you know. But so I just wanted to bring that up since you mentioned Luann, because it is kind of one of my pet peeve comics where I used to really like it, and it's kind of unfortunate, you know, kind of what it's devolved into or where it's going.
So do you hate read it, or do you just ignore it?
I just ignore it. It's not something I have strong feelings about. I don't really hate read things, you know. If I just don't like them, I don't like them. You know, it was kind of a sport to hate read Nancy for a while, but also with the nature of comic strips, especially newspaper strips, where they're under a deadline to produce material like every single day, it does become very repetitive. So after a point, you're like, why am I just hate reading the same thing over and over? And then you kind of move on. So even though it only takes like a few seconds to read, I don't tend to hate read things. You know, I've quit reading ongoing manga series like Bleach, which nobody here is probably going to be familiar with. But it's like, this is just too stupid. I can't read it anymore, or I don't get any enjoyment out of this. Why am I still doing it? I'm the same kind of person that just quits watching a TV show in the middle of the show. I'll read the Wikipedia. How does this end? Okay, just let me read the spoilers in 10 minutes rather than spending hours of my life watching the rest of this show, which drives some people crazy, but I just don't have that completionist. I've been sunk cost fallacy. I've invested so much time in this, I got to stick it out. So I don't hate read it. I look at it occasionally kind of like, you know, I'll think of it once every few weeks and look it up and be like, yep, still not interested, and ignored again for a while.
My last strip is one that Joe has already mentioned, and that's Little Abner. And the reason I had Little Abner, things that we've talked about, the art, especially the, when Al Cap started it, he drew everything. But very soon he brought in ghost artists, and some of his ghost artists, you know, Frank Frazetta drew that strip for years. He drew all the Sunday strips through the 50s. You got Frank Frazetta drawing your comic strip. It's going to look beautiful. And up until the mid-60s, he was the best observer of kind of the American culture. Not just politics, but culture overall. And he had no problem poking fun at everybody. But Joe alluded to it a little earlier. I remember reading through the later strips, because they had collected books at the library that my mother was going to college to. And there was almost a point where all of a sudden it's like, wow, this isn't funny anymore. It's just him ranting about kids. And these goddamn kids don't know any don't have any goddamn sense. He became the guy who just came out, opened the door, and, you know, you kids get off my lawn. Whereas in the past, if he wanted to make fun of something, he would find the humor in it. And there's a difference between satire, where you're taking what's funny, blowing it up, and making stories with it to just, damn kids with their long hair and their lousy music, they're all idiots. But the first, from 1937 to about 1960, there is no better story strip ever. The stories were engaging, they were exciting, they were well written, there were twists. The characters were all bigger than life, but easily recognizable. He would have characters that would fade out of the strip and not come back for 3 or 4 years, but then they would come back and be part of the story again. He was able to use this incredibly diverse cast and just weave an elongated story that you can't do in any other medium. You could not do that story in movies or TV or even comic books. It had to be a comic strip. And I'm in the same sort of boat as Joe. I bought the Kitchen Sink collected editions, which were shot from as much of the original art as possible, because Dennis Kitchen, who wrote the book that Joe was talking about, Dennis Kitchen was the biggest Little Abner collector in the world. And now IDW is publishing it, but they're not publishing it the way Kitchen Sink did. Kitchen Sink did the dailies, and then their plan was, once they got done with the dailies, they'd go back and do the Sunday strips, because the Sunday strips were different stories. But IDW is publishing them in order with the Sunday strips, and it's like, do I really want to pay $50 just to get these Sunday strips and all the other strips I already have? And like Joe said, eventually I'll do it too. And there you go. There's more than enough comic strip talk. You know who wouldn't talk for an hour and 40 minutes about comic strips?
Our sponsors?
That's right. These guys, our sponsors.
Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC, get you some blades, they're wonderful, I use them, I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors, Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and Dream Host. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising.
And now that the sponsors are done, we ask Joe what's going on the eBays.
Oh, tremendous stuff. All sorts of stuff. A miracle. A plethora of styles and just a...
You got nothing.
No, not really. I mean... Oh, hang on. Live. Someone just sent me an offer for Dark Horse Greatest World's Retailer books. Corey, let's ask the Strode. Tell our folks about Dark Horse Comics Greatest World's Retailer variants. Or just the Comics Greatest Worlds, I guess.
I can tell you about Comics Greatest World. Back in the early 90s, you had all of these independent publishers wanting to create their own superhero universes. Because when Image came about, it was, Image is going to have these superhero books. And most independent publishers before then didn't do superheroes. They did other things because they felt that Marvel and DC pretty much saturated the market with superheroes. Image showed that, other people could do superheroes and they would sell well. So you had Malibu do their own superhero universe. Dark Horse had a superhero universe as well that they brought in. They used a lot of the talent they already used, but it was going to be something that they could own. And none of the books really did all that well. I think the longest running one was it Ghost?
I think you're right.
Ghost, and I think it only ran 25 issues, and most of that was because Adam Hughes was drawing it.
It had a crossover with the Death Batgirl.
Yeah.
So.
And there was X, which was kind of their vigilante character. Some people will know the character Barb Wire, because there was a movie made with Pam Anderson, which I still haven't seen, and I've seen most comic book movies. But it was an attempt to try and create their own superhero universe that they really pushed hard, and they actually tried to bring it back again a few years ago after they lost Star Wars. And people just aren't interested. But there were probably retailer exclusives to try and hype the books.
That there were. What they did is they had these books, and if I can find them here, where they each one dealt with the various city line. And let's see, this all come out in 93. The books in question were Steel Harbor, Arcadia, Golden City, and Cinnabar Flats. These are not super high collectible items, yet they're not easy to find because nobody really cares. And I've had a set of them on eBay for the longest time, and someone's just sent me a best offer. The price I asked for them originally was $50 for the set because there were no other sets. Everybody else had them anywhere from $10 a piece. This gentleman has given me an offer of $35. Jen, what do you think? Should I say yes or no?
What were you trying to sell it for?
I asked $50. He gave me an offer of $35.
What is it? I wasn't listening.
Just rare comics that nobody wants.
Take the offer.
Corey, what do you say?
Get him out of there.
I am going to accept the offer, which I probably would have done anyways because I've been sitting on these things for a while. And they're just like that. Four pieces of my vast accumulation of crap are gone. And you two can join in the fun. And just go to Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, and mention that you know Jen, Corey, me, Dan, Adam, you listen to our podcast,
you have a
big
pulse.
Donuts. Yeah, exactly, and I'll toss in a freebie. Just like John Davis was very surprised to open up a box that showed up on his doorstep unsolicited that contained the copy of Captain America 1 that I offered a couple shows ago, so... Yeah, that's the way I work.
And after we're done with that, we ask Jen what's going on with the arts.
Oh, gosh. Can I just save it for freaking? Because if I talk about it now, I'm not going to have nothing to talk about on freaking. So.
She'll have.
Okay.
Yep.
And just an update for folks, the Worldwide News book has been pushed back.
Aw.
But it will debut at LionCon,
where
Dan and I will both be signing it.
Neat.
There you go. And now it's time for my favorite part of the show. No, not Jin blowing up a donut. It's freaking a geeky joke when you're freaking on.
Well, let's just say here, I'm getting real tired of you, Strode. Your negativity is really starting to get to me.
His negativity?
Yes, because...
Is he ever negative?
First of all, he puts this thing on Facebook where his glasses are on the table. And so, you know, I can't read what he wrote. It's usually fairly inspiring. So
I take my
glasses off, and I feel something pop. And lo and behold, a brown screw fell out of my glass, landed on my brown carpet, and my lens popped out. And had Corey not put such negativity on Facebook, I wouldn't have taken my glasses off, thereby losing the small yet vital screw that kept my glasses together. And so for the latter part of yesterday, I walked around not being able to see a damn thing.
Because you're blind.
Well, no, I can see things up close, but I can't see things far away. So no TV, no yelling at the kids to get off my lawn, because they really might not be kids. They could be, you know, very small people. So, Corey, next time you feel the need to take your glasses off, leave them on your head. But that's not what really got me torqued off. So last night, I'm home alone. And I had a day like you, Jen. I took an unscheduled nap, and so I woke up, and I'm kind of groggy, and my stomach's hungry, and I'm like, oh, let's see what I can go eat. And I'm looking around, and, you know, we've been so busy. I mean, the mini geeking, we finally got our ceiling fixed, so, like, all our money's been spent on the ceiling, which is another good reason to go buy stuff on eBay for me. So we haven't got a chance to run anywhere to get groceries, so I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to eat? Chris is out with the girls. I'm home alone. I stayed home because the guy who was doing our ceiling was here most of the day. So while he was here, I was doing a lot of eBaying. So again, as a mini geeking, I got everything up on eBay that I had originally, well, we'll talk about that in geeking. So I'm really hungry, and I don't have no clue what I'm going to eat. And so finally, I reach under the bottom of the sink and pull out this old moldy bread, and I peel the green shit off.
Sure.
Kind of.
Well, I'm not believing this at all.
And then I find some, in the garbage is a can of crusty peanut butter, you know, the type of crust like saltines. So I kind of scrape it off. I feed a little to the poor starving rabbit. And I think about hot some pepper, but now I'm too hungry. So I pour it down, and then I find myself some tepid tap water, and I just figure, okay, I'm going to sit down and eat my meager meal. I turn on Facebook, and here, 1 hour ago, Corey checks in at a restaurant called Ward 6. Ward 6 is a really cool restaurant down in St.
Louis.
What's neat about it, I know Corey said that there's not a lot of menu, but they do change their menu as they buy stuff from a lot of the local and statewide vendors. So what's on there, I don't know if you noticed on the menu, it actually had a stamp on it for the day.
Yes.
That may change tomorrow because they might run out of one dish and then find, hey, we got a great deal on this guy. We're going to add that to our mix. So you could go back. Some things stay the same almost constant. Other times they'll change. Something you wanted will be gone. Something new will take its place. So here I find that Corey and Jin, I'm not mad at you because I know what a rat bastard Corey is. He would not think to call me and say, Joe, I'm not even a frickin' mile from your house. Why don't you come join us? And I'm like, no, did Corey think to call? No, that's okay. I mean, he wants your attention for himself. I can understand that. And 9 times out of 10, I might not even have been around on a Sunday night. But this is just one time I woke up. I'm like starving, man. And he doesn't even think to call me. And when I complain about it, he says, I posted here. You could have dropped by. Fuck you. I don't sit on Facebook like, oh, God, is Corey going to post? Oh, man, I can't wait. Is Corey going to post? Oh, no, that's a different Facebook. But, no, it's like, oh, when's Corey going to post? I'm starving. Maybe I'll join him. Yeah. No, sorry, that's not reality. Oh, yeah, sorry, let's see. I got voicemail, I got email, I got message Facebook, and I got all these other ways. Nope, did not think to call me on a restaurant that's practically in my backyard. So meantime, I had me some sausage and mayonnaise soup, some milk that was left out in the sun for a week, some fuzzy bread, and a glass of cold gravy with a hair in it. Thank you very much, Strode. Jen, what are you freaking on?
Oh, I did an art show on Saturday, which I think I mentioned last time, and it was just, you know, I had planned on going out to the show and kind of scoping it out to decide if I wanted to do it or not, but I got kind of recruited in by the guys that run the show, and I'm not disparaging them in the slightest. They're very nice people. I felt like it was reasonably well organized, but it's just it wasn't an appropriate venue. I was in Calhoun Square in Minneapolis, which is kind of a little mall in Uptown. There's a famous Dave's Barbecue and a Jimmy John's and an LA Fitness, but there aren't any. It's very small, so there's not like anchor stores. You don't have like a Macy's or, you know, a Nordstrom or anything like that. So it's not a high foot traffic area. I was inside. It was Pride weekend. It was basically deserted. So, you know, it doesn't have a high cost of entry, but, you know, for somebody that is as overscheduled and overextended as I am all of the time, since I'm almost to the point of doing the equivalent of two full-time jobs worth of work, you know, I spent 8 hours at the show on Saturday. I was busting my ass Friday night. I had to go buy a table. I didn't have a 6-foot table. I thought I had an 8-foot table cover, so I went to Menards and bought an 8-foot folding table. It was heavy. I dragged it all the way through the store because I'm an idiot that didn't get a cart. I dragged it all the way home. I went upstairs. I measured my table cover. It was 6 feet. So I had to take it back to a different Menards closer to me. Exchange it. I bought some folding chairs. I got a 6-foot table. I went and had dinner with somebody, and was loading my car up until like 1 a.m. My hench Taya showed up early while I was putting on my makeup. I was tired. I was cranky. I got to the show. I forgot my umbrella. I spent an hour walking around Uptown trying to find a store that would sell an umbrella. I popped into, there's a hat store. I think it's on Hennepin. There's a hat store. They sell nothing but hats. Of course, I'm walking around Uptown wearing my top hat. So, you know, lots of people are, like, pointing at me or saying things to me. I popped in the hat store and said, I feel like I should come in here just on principle. And there were three people behind the counter, and they looked at me, and they kind of laughed. And I looked at them a second. I said, do you sell umbrellas? And they said, no. Okay, I said, I will be back at some indeterminate point in the future. You haven't seen the last of me. So I left and continued, and I finally found a kind of crappy umbrella at a Cub Foods down there somewhere. CVS had folding umbrellas, but not the kind that I need to dance. So I was hot and hungry and cranky by the time I got back an hour later to the show. I bought a hula hoop. There were hula hoops at the grocery store, and I thought, I really want to know if I can still hula hoop, and the answer is no, I cannot. So that's my new thing. I've got this hula hoop, so I am determined that I'm going to relearn how to hula hoop and incorporate this in, you know, along with the... I didn't take the donut to the show, and maybe I should have, but, you know, I was talking to some of the artists there. And I don't, you know, like my income is primarily focused on growing my business online. You know, I do shows for two reasons. Well, I do shows to make money, but making money isn't my primary focus in doing the show. You know, I do the show because I'm an absolute attention whore. So, you know,
one hell of a dancer.
I love to perform, you know. I mean, and it's not that I like the attention. I like making people laugh. You know, so if I have an audience but I'm not making money, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm performing, I'm having a good time, I'm making people smile, You know, there was a few kids that came through that I, you know, the kids always like my hat, so in my dark makeup, so I kind of played around with a couple of kids. But if there's nobody there for me to either promote my work or introduce new people to my work or perform or just get a reaction, you know, if I'm not making money and there's no audience and I'm not spreading the word, then why am I there? It wasn't a good use of 8 hours of my time. I did have to say I really enjoyed the artists that I was there with. I had a lot of really great conversations over the course of the day. There was a guy working clay next to me. There was a painter who was painting off and on throughout the day. A few feet down, there was a guy that was drawing next to me, and I talked to all of them. And I really enjoyed, like, hearing other people's stories. You know, one of the artists, he was telling me about how he started drawing while he was in prison to have something to show for his time. And he started he's an adult, and he just started learning how to draw, and he's turned it into a really lucrative side business and something he really enjoys. And that's inspiring. It's been really great. I feel like this is not a freaking, but I feel like I'm really starting to find my crowd here in St. Paul. I love St. Paul, but I'm also starting to meet with other people who have come from very similar circumstances for me. There was something they weren't happy with about their life, and so they made a decision to change it. You know, the clay guy, he wasn't happy with what he was doing. He needed to be creative. His wife is very supportive. She makes money to help him. He's going back to school, and he's getting out there. He's doing his sculpture. He's making art. Like me, he has a bit of performance aspect. He's there working the clay. He likes it when there's people around to watch him working and kind of watch the creative process. And that's been really great. But, you know, I could have gone there and talked with them for an hour. I didn't need to be there for 8 hours for somebody who I really had hoped to set aside that day to you know, make videos or work on something here, or finish a piece, or actually work on comics like I'm supposed to. So I have to be more, you know, selective with the shows. But I don't regret going necessarily, because it was everything. If it's not a success, it's at least a learning experience, you know, so there's that. I'm not upset that I went, but it's probably not a show that I'll return to. It's an unfortunate choice of venue. There's just not really, like, the audience I think, you know, needs to be their people, you know, kind of hustling by going about their day. There's not really people there, you know, looking to see an art show, and that's unfortunate. And hopefully maybe if they continue to do these shows, they'll find a better venue for it. But that's about as negative as I'm going to get in freaking. I was disappointed with my art show, and I don't know how to hula hoop anymore. Corey, what are you freaking on?
First, and I'll talk about it more in geeking, Marvel has announced that the Howard the Duck comic is canceled. It was one of the books that I really enjoyed, and I'll talk about it more in geeking. Second, I am a huge fan of Impressionists. And at times I have worked toward doing voices and impressions and things like that. So when USA announced that they were going to have a kind of a competition showcase TV show for Impressionists called First Impressions, I was interested. And then I found out that one of my favorite Impressionists, Rachel Butera, was going to be on the show. I got really interested. If you go to the Facebooks or go to the Googles, put in Rachel Butera and just listen to some of her impressions. She's not just an amazing Impressionist, but she does impressions that other people don't do, which I think is really the key for a good Impressionist. Everybody does Christopher Walken. Everybody does Al Pacino. Everybody does Wanda Sykes. It's when people do people you don't expect that you can see if they're very, very good. I watched 4 episodes of this series, and by the end of it, I wanted to die. Not only were they all doing the same people, yes, you could do Jack Nicholson, so can everybody else on the planet. Yes, you could do Christian Slater because it's just Jack Nicholson. Yes, you could do Christopher Walken, although I do a great Christopher Walken for one word. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Now! That's my Christopher Walken.
That was really bad.
But by the fourth episode, I just, my soul was crying. And then Rachel Butera came on in one episode. And it showed the talent level because she was far and away better than everybody else on the show. And she had funny prepared bits because it's a lot of improv games. But because she's worked in radio and stuff, she's very quick. And that's when I said, all right, I need to stop watching because no one's going to be as good as that because everybody else is like, somebody who that at their job, they say, you do a really good Al Pacino. You should go up on stage. Yeah, you should. No, you shouldn't. You should. You really shouldn't. And the last thing I'm geeking on, Joe, you know of my love of spaghetti westerns.
Freaking.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Freaking.
Yes, we're still freaking.
You know of my love of spaghetti westerns.
Yes, with sauce and everything.
Have you seen the Trinity movies?
No.
My name is Trinity. My name is still Trinity. They're these comedy westerns. And they were really kind of the last group of spaghetti westerns when they went into comedy, a lot of slapstick and stuff. And they were movies with Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer. And they became kind of an acting team that did tons of movies together. They didn't just do westerns. They did cop comedy movies. They did spy comedy movies. It was announced earlier today that Bud Spencer had passed away. And I just want to kind of do a quick remembrance. If you have not seen Trinity's Hill, My Name is Trinity, My Name is Still Trinity, you can get them really cheap in the discount DVD bin. They're very funny. They're very slapsticky. And a lot of what they wanted to do, they wanted to capture that silent comedy feel. So you had Trinity, who is the ultra cool guy, who nothing ever goes wrong, and his tubby friend who screws everything up, and that was Bud Spencer. They were a great comedy team, and kind of sad that they're gone. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I discovered an interesting shop called Tom Franz's Sports Collectible. It's upwards of that area Highway 10 where that Blue Sun Soda shop is, and 2436 County Road 10, Moundsview, an actual sports card shop. I've driven by it a couple times, and what caught my eye, of course, is collectibles. So when I went up there last weekend, I just stopped in and checked it out. And it was, wall to wall with, Magic, Pokemon, sports cards. I picked me up some of those holders for the treasury size comics that I have. So if you're looking in the Twin Cities area for a guy who still carries sports card, check him out. I looked on Google. He's got a lot of good reviews. People actually know the gentleman, Tom Franzens. And again, he's on Facebook as well, Sports Collectibles. So there's at least one left, one that I'm aware of. Oh, they broke me, Corey.
Oh, no.
Hawks.com. Every preview's got ads for Hawks.com, the source for vintage and pop culture collectibles. And I always keep writing, I want to check it out, and I did. And I haven't bought anything, but there's a ton of stuff to buy. What I find's interesting, or disgusting, is when you're looking at, like, the auctions, most of the auction stuff all starts at $100. I have no idea if it's actually worth $100 or not. Maybe, maybe not. If you go browse for sale, you'll find things. I've seen a few things as low as $10. And they have everything categorized. Action figures, aviation, G.I. Joe, Roy Rogers. So kind of a fun little thing. No doubt owned probably totally by Geppy, the guy who owns previews. Otherwise, it wouldn't get so many damn ads in the previews catalog. That's just another place to check out. Although, like I said, I'm very suspicious of the auctions because everyone starts at $100. So either he's only putting the good stuff for auction and the crap's for sale, but either way, you might find something that's kind of cool. Only read one book that I'm geeking on, The Adventures of Superman by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. I bought this from Mr. Gruber. The highlight of it, of course, was the Treasury Edition where the Earth 1, Earth... No, actually, I think they were Earth 2, weren't they? Superman, Wonder
yes.
Woman fight each other. A little disappointed that they never covered this in All-Star Squadron. You know, I would have thought maybe they'd made a reference to it or something. But it was a good flick. Some of the other stories were fun. I mean, the art, of course, is superb. A couple series I've never read before. I found the books in the Superman that they reprinted more interesting than the DC Comics Presents. Those were just terrible. I mean, just... ugh. But the art was awesome. I picked this up super cheap from Gruber at the last con. Whether I keep it or not, I have no idea. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. If I don't,
if you're going to sell it, let me know first.
Okay. I'll put that on a list of things to let Corey know about. Of course, not like he'll let me know when he's going out to eat with Jim. You know, that's a freaking for another day.
Joe, do we have to keep you in the loop of our dinner plans now?
If you're going to be less than a mile from my house, sure.
Well, I didn't know that I was so close to your house.
Corey
just sent me the address.
Corey did.
Corey, why did you take away an opportunity for me to see Joe?
I didn't realize how close we were until we got there.
Oh, you never Google anything, do you? This is not freaking. This is not freaking, Jin. What are you geeking on?
Hold on.
No.
I have proof. Jin?
What?
Could you please explain to Joe how I am directionally challenged?
Am I supposed to be referencing something specifically?
How pretty much even if Google tells
me
to
turn. Oh, yeah, no, Corey is
terrible.
Bad at navigation. Like, we use the GPS and he still manages to, like, the GPS is saying go right and he turns left. So, yeah, we pretty much end up driving around Minneapolis and St. Paul aimlessly every time we go anywhere.
It's no wonder Butch won't show up the podcast anymore.
Jin, what are you geeking on?
I am geeking on this post that you put on my Facebook today. I'm gonna read this and then explain it and embarrass you.
Well, I'm used to that.
Yeah. So I wake up today, and I don't remember if it was, I think it was this morning, because I was up at like 6 this morning because I had to be up to deal with some legal crap and paperwork that I had to take care of when the bank opened. So, yeah, it says, I see by my on this day, this is referencing the Facebook thing that shows you anniversaries of your posts from like 1 or 2 or 5 years ago. It says, I see by my on this day that 3 years ago, the lovely and talented Jennifer Miller sent me a surprise friend request. Jennifer Miller is my real name.
Holy crap, she's kayfabing.
Yeah, and we continued a friendship that is one of the longest and most rewarding of my life. We throw out the term best friend at the drop of a hat, but through all the changes and growth we have both gone through, one thing stays constant. She knows me better than anyone. We trust each other implicitly, and the last couple of years have shown that bond is true. I'm glad she's around and proud of how she keeps growing and trying to be her best self, and I'm always happy to have someone whose intelligence is tempered with deep emotions. I'm crazy! And that we just count on each other in all things.
I didn't write the crazy part.
Yes, I know. I guess the friend request she sent wasn't because someone hacked her account. So what he's talking about is I got very angry. And you, in my defense, you know, you have talked about how you used to be very negative and stuff. And so I think, like, I think your move away from that was after I quit talking to you. Would I be wrong in saying that?
I was on that journey, but one of the reasons you were really mad at me was because, now this is my memory of what you said, I wasn't there for you as much as you would need me.
Well,
I was dealing with a lot of personal stuff at the time.
I remember also being very angry, though, because your posts on, like, my Facebook, you were very negative, like, dumping on Southerners and making...
Yeah, you got mad when I would make fun of your governor.
Well, not just that, but I felt a lot of the stuff that you said was, like, just kind of, you know, dumping on the place I lived in. You know, it's like, well, even though I don't really want to be there, like, it was still my home. So, I mean, there was a lot of complicated stuff going into that, but... But, you know, like, both of us are very different coming back to this. So we didn't talk for a number of years. And when I first started coming out of my depression and starting to kind of rebuild my support network, and what I didn't understand at the time, but was me kind of building the foundation that I would use to finally kind of, like, reboot my life, I sent Corey a friend request on Facebook. I didn't try to message him because it always goes into the box that nobody sees or checks. So he responded to this friend request by sending me an email that said, I think someone hacked your Facebook account. Because obviously I wouldn't have sent him a friend request. So that's the explanation of that. But, you know, I mean, that was nice to see. This morning, I strangely didn't see the, like, in mind, like, on this day. I guess this isn't the day I actually became friends with you again, so maybe, or was it?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Oh, well, it didn't show up in mine for some reason. Maybe it did. Now I'm gonna have to look. Hang on.
We've lost Joe, by the way.
Joe, please make some, like, can you just, like, hum the girl from Ipanema for a second while I look at my thing? Just, like, hold me. Here. Yeah, okay, there it is. Well, you know, it's a little thing. It says you became friends on Facebook with one person. See, a lot of times I get, like, the big thing with both of your profile pictures, and it says share this and stuff, so I don't know why yours is a little tiny one at the bottom of the page.
It's about the size of it.
Well, any... Well, anyway, you know, I mean, that was a nice thing to wake up to, and I don't tend to like to get, like, too emotional about things, but I just wanted to mention that because I appreciate that, and it's been, you know, it has been a journey, and I wouldn't have been able to move up here without your help and Joe's help, and you guys are the closest thing I have to a family right now, especially since I don't even have much of an estranged family anymore. So, you know, you really are, like I've described to other people, you know, you're like my anchor and somebody I can always depend on, and you putting up with me when I'm at my worst has really helped me kind of get over that so I can become my best. And I don't really know any other, like, terrible Hallmark card sounding ways to, like, to, like, put that, but and I'm understanding now. I know we were talking about this at dinner last night while we were maliciously not including Joe. But I really do, like, I'm changing so rapidly, you know, it's a thing. Like, I really feel like you said, like, I'm finally listening. Like, I hear people now. I really feel like I'm starting to learn how to connect with people and really, like, empathize with people and for the first time in my life. And you know, it's been a process. And I know I've been kind of melodramatic, and I know I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've hurt people along the way, and I'm sorry for that. And people have hurt me, but you know, I really, like, I'm finding, I've started meditating, and I've got, like, this kindness meditation on my phone, and, you know, just really learning how to let go of the negativity and let go of of anger and pain and forgive other people and forgive myself and everything else, and I couldn't have done all of this without you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What are you geeking on, Corey?
mine is not nearly as deep, although...
I like comic books.
Actually, the first thing I'm geeking on is just Frank Cho.
Cho!
Every time he goes to a convention, he does some sort of sketch that A, is beautiful, and B, is hilarious. His outrage sketches make me laugh, but there's a recent story up on Bleeding Cool where he was at a convention and they had a quick draw thing. Where, and what it is, it's you get a bunch of artists, and somebody stands up and gives a suggestion, and the artists all draw it. And the suggestion was sexy swamp monster.
Oh, Lord.
And a couple of the artists drew, you know, a sexy swamp monster, and another artist drew, you know, a monster in lingerie. And what Frank Cho drew was Groot looking at a Playboy that had a swamp monster in it.
Oh, God, I see it.
And it's...
I am Groot!
All I care... No. Now, I've told the Frank Cho story of how we made him draw sketches at our convention that he didn't want to draw because he lost over $400 in a single hand on a poker game. But I just love Frank Cho. I love his art. I love his humor. If he comes to another convention, I'm just going to give him a hug and not explain why. The second thing that I'm geeking on is a series on the WWE Network. And Joe and I talked about, we watched a few episodes. I actually had Saturday off. And after I got, like, you know, the first layer of crap put away in my house and some cleaning done and a long, beautiful hike down by the river. No, not a van down by the river, a hike by the river. I binge-watched the rest of Edge and Christian's show that totally reeks of awesomeness. And it's the funniest goddamn thing.
It makes you want to hang up your microphone after watching those two, doesn't it?
It reminds me of why the Attitude Era was great. It wasn't the storylines. It wasn't the wrestling. It was the fact that everybody involved was having fun. And this show is, they're fans of wrestling, and they get that it's nerdy and geeky and stupid and weird. And they have Gilbert on the show. They have comedy bits. And it made me happy. I would end an episode and go, I want to watch more. This makes me happy. You know, there's times when I watch wrestling and I go, oh, that's really good. But this was something where at the end of it, it was like I just had a big stupid grin on my face and was unbelievably happy. And how often does entertainment actually just, you go, I'm happy? For Jen, it's watching the Mad Max movie. For Joe, I don't know what makes you happy other than complaining about me.
Cockleburrs in the loincloth.
And the last geeking I have is a comic-based geeking. Go out, if you've ever read Howard the Duck, the comic, and enjoyed it, go pick up Howard the Duck number 8. When they started the new Howard the Duck series, I was against it. I was Groucho Marx in duck suit.
Whatever it is, I'm against it.
It's not trying to be Steve Gerber's Howard the Duck. It's a different thing. It's still funny. It still is that mix of emotion and comedy and Marvelness. But Howard the Duck number 8, he meets up with his girlfriend from the Gerber series, Beverly Switzer. And she has moved on with her life. And it's an emotional issue of why they didn't work. Why as a couple, they still love each other, but it didn't work. And one of the things that really sort of grabbed at me, not just emotionally, but in the comic nerd way, you could tell they went back and they read Gerber's Howard the Duck. And one of the jokes that Gerber used was that Beverly, whenever Howard would get hurt or something, she would say,
I need to learn how to be a vet. It's a nice little bit, right? Well, Beverly now is living in Maine, studying to be a vet. And Howard says, wow, I didn't know you were interested in that. And then they show the panels from the original, and it just hammers home that emotional feeling of you think you love someone, but you're not paying attention to who they are. And they will tell you what they want out of life over and over and over again. But you're so wrapped up in what's going on at the moment, you don't get those notes. And that, in a nutshell, is why Beverly and Howard didn't work. And for a goofy comic book about a duck in a superhero universe, it was touching and it was real and it was enlightening, just like Gerber's stuff on Howard the Duck, where, yes, you've got, you know, you've got sentient cookies that come to life and try to kill people, but there's that emotional core of realness that grabs it. And it made me even a little more sad that Howard the Duck is ending, because Chip Zdarsky, who's also writing the Jughead comic over at Archie and doing a phenomenal job, gets it. He's not copying Gerber. He's not imitating Gerber. He understands that the core of Gerber's work was it has to be emotionally real. And this comic was emotionally real. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us talk about funny books for a little over 2 hours.
Yeah, this has been a long episode, but a good one.
Yes. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the ones that you like the most, Joe.
Perhaps it wasn't a good idea to hold a referendum with the same people who came up with Bodie McBoatface. Jim?
Hit my music, boys.
Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.